Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Scarborough Cattle Company to be inducted into Cowboy Hall of Fame, Midland. For John Scarborough, the fifth-generation rancher, the feeling might take a little bit longer to hit him with his family's cattle business. The Scarborough Cattle Company is in the Texas Cowboy Hall of Fame. He said it might not hit him until after he and his father and Scarborough Cattle Company owner Chris Scarborough are accepting the award during the induction ceremony in Fort Worth today. The Midland-based cattle company, which has been around for 139 years, was selected as part of the 2022 Hall of Fame class this past fall and will be honored along with three other inductees at a ceremony that will take place at Billy Bob's. As an operation going in as Scarborough Cattle Company, it's hard to explain because it really is an honor for 139 years of Scarboroughs who have put in the time and effort to ranch, Scarborough said. For me and my dad, who are going to accept the award, it's an honor. I think it's an unbelievable thing to be recognized for ranching. John comes from a long line of different operators from the family who has passed down the company from generation to generation. He is named after his great uncle, who was also named John Scarborough, that helped start the company. Ranching is such a behind-the-scenes thing that people drive by country and don't realize there's people out there producing that land and growing things, Scarborough said. We're just extremely honored. It's hard to put into words just how grateful we are just to go in there and be recognized. We're going to be in the Hall of Fame along with other inductees that have been honored here in Fort Worth. For the Scarborough family, it's a fitting return to Fort Worth on Thursday. That's where their ancestors first arrived when they came to Texas from New York in 1883. It was the family's great uncle, John Scarborough, who moved south. His journey took him further west as rail lines were laid, eventually making his way to Abilene and eventually Midland. He heard that land was plentiful, John said. You can get it for cheap. Our family has made up of entrepreneurs. They had businesses back in New York, a leather shop where they made handbags and things like that. They got to Fort Worth and followed the railroad tracks west as they were building them there. It was in Abilene where the first John Scarborough first overheard a couple of ranchers discussing the sheep business as both men were trying to find a way out of it. John stopped in Abilene, waiting tables, and that's where he overheard guys talking about the sheep business, John said of his great uncle. The ancestor, John Scarborough, butted in and asked to get involved, and both guys sold him their whole flock of the 500-head herd on the spot for $2,400. The company's founder would grow that operation 100-fold and in 1888 shipped 49,000 sheep to Chicago, which at the time was the largest livestock transaction ever recorded. He bought them out, the younger Scarborough said. The first John Scarborough's brother, Christian Scarborough, moved his family from New York to Midland. He was also a rancher, and their third brother, Phil Scarborough, would follow. Together, all three founded the Scarborough Cattle Company in 1901. They started settling in Midland, the younger John Scarborough said. That's where they started the first national bank and where the business took off. Midland became known as the Midway because of the halfway distance between El Paso and Fort Worth on the railroad tracks. It became a hub for cattle and business. The Scarborough Cattle Company would go from the first John and Christian Scarborough in the 1800s to Clarence Scarborough Sr. and Clarence Scarborough Jr. to Chris and John today, being a big part of ranching and beef cattle for parts of three centuries. The company remains active in ranching, operating the North Curtis Ranch in Martin County, just north of Midland, as well as the Alamositos Ranch in Oldham County in the Texas Panhandle. Fort Worth is where it all started for us when we came to Texas, John Scarborough said. We went to Fort Worth and then moved west. It's a full circle coming back to the stockyards there. I don't know if it's really hit me yet. I don't know if it will when we get there, and just to see it in person. COVID-19 news by the numbers. COVID in the basin. Ector County, 36,914 total cases, 678 deaths. Midland County, 37,023 total cases, 480 deaths. Texas, 6,634,456 total cases, 85,404 deaths. U.S. cases, 80,733,979 total confirmed and 978,330 deaths. Find out more at COVIDinthebasin.com or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/TZTRJLF. See the ECISD COVID-19 dashboard at tinyurl.com/Y6NTPTUQ. MCH numbers. Medical Center Hospital has released its COVID inpatient numbers as of 8:30 a.m. Wednesday. 18 COVID patients in-house, med-surg non-critical, 9 COVID patients, critical care, 9 COVID patients, 3 unvaccinated, 3 vaccinated, 3 unknown, 6 COVID patients on ventilator, 3 unvaccinated, 2 vaccinated, 1 unknown. Age ranges of COVID patients, 45 years old to 88 years old. COVID patients from outside Ector County, 1 from Alpine, 1 from Big Spring, 1 from Hobbs, New Mexico, 1 from Jowl, New Mexico, 3 from Midland. Quick hits. AARP is offering free text assistance for seniors by appointment through April 12th at the Northside Senior Center, 1225 Adams Avenue. Masks are required. To schedule an appointment, call 432-337-5281. Jacoy, the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center, 1310 North FM 1788 Midland, will present Jacoy Funny is Funny World Tour at 8 p.m. today. Doors open at 7 p.m. For tickets or information, visit tinyurl.com/YCKM77PC. State of the District. The first in-person State of the District address will start at 6:30 p.m. today with a reception and the program starting at 7 p.m. at the Performing Arts Center at Odessa High School. Superintendent Scott Murray said he, along with several members of the ECISD team and others, will deliver an update to the community on the progress they are making and the working that is being done. Murray said people from around the state and nation also will be joining. The event will be broadcast on the ECISD website after it concludes. https://www.ectorcountyisd.org/. The State of the District was online last year. Cirque Italia. Cirque Italia has scheduled a Water Circus Gold Unit 22 tour event with the following times at the Ector County Coliseum, 4201 Andrews Highway. Show times are 7:30 p.m. today and Friday, 1:30 p.m., 4:30 p.m., and 7:30 p.m. Saturday, and 1:30 p.m. and 4:30 p.m. Sunday. For tickets or more information, visit tinyurl.com/54BJCT7K or tinyurl.com/2P9UKVW4. Exhibits. The Ellen Noel Art Museum, 4909 East University Boulevard, has scheduled the following exhibits. Les Steiners de Gala by Salvador Dali, on loan from the Castagnoli Art Museum, Niagara University. The exhibit will be on display through March 27th. Waterworks on loan from artists through April 24th. Ave Maria, the Many Visions of the Madonna through August 14th. For more information, visit noelartmuseum.org. Permian Basin Red Cross holding open house. March is Red Cross Month, but the Red Cross of the Permian Basin will have more than that to celebrate this weekend. This Saturday, the Red Cross of the Permian Basin has an open house to celebrate the reopening of its designed chapter office. The chapter open house will take place from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. at its location at 9601 Wright Drive. While the Red Cross of the Permian Basin has remained busy carrying out its mission, the chapter office has been partially closed to the public during the pandemic. The time spent working remotely with volunteers allowed the American Red Cross of the Permian Basin Executive Director Tracy Austin to decide how to repurpose the office. One of the changes to the office included adding more work areas for volunteers and to make them feel at home. "We've all been thinking about space needs and what we really need," Austin said. "We do need space for people to meet and classes. How are we efficiently using that space? That really wasn't something we looked at before, not here in the Permian Basin." She said she thought they could use the space in a much more efficient way if volunteers had designated desks where they can go to help with projects or write letters. Whatever they need to do, they can have a special place to go, so now they have a volunteer office where there are several desks set up and they can make that their home for their day and get some work done while they're here. The Permian Basin chapter of the Red Cross has been partially opened, but now they'll remain open to the public and offer services in person, such as classes. "We'll be able to have classes again," Austin said. "We're hoping that this is the end of a very long pandemic. One of the reasons people volunteer is because they want to have social interaction, so doing that via technology isn't a lot of fun." "Everything in the office has been redesigned," Austin said. "We repurposed our offices because we realized that not everyone has to be in the office to carry out our mission. So now, for example, I'm a mobile employee and I can work from anywhere because COVID really showed us that I really don't need an office per se. I don't need a space where I store papers and things because everything is now digital. So I'm able to use that office that was dedicated to me, and now it can be used for a fundraiser or for our volunteers or by anyone that's visiting the Permian Basin for Red Cross businesses." Austin said the newly designed office will have a lounge place set up for volunteers to relax as well as a work area. They can have a cup of coffee and talk and make it feel like a place that you'd want to come to and be with people that you care about while carrying out a very important life-saving mission, Austin said. "We also have another work area that's set up for volunteers. We've really revamped the way our office flows and our office works, and that's one of the reasons why we're doing the open house. It's to celebrate that we're back in the office, even though we never stopped for a minute. We continued to deliver missions throughout the pandemic, but now we're able to do it in person, and we're celebrating that." ECISD students to receive surprise of laptop computers. 35 Ector County ISD students who work as tutors in the IDRA Valued Youth Program will receive one in the form of a new laptop computer, a gift from ARCA Continental Coca-Cola Beverages and the Mexican Consulate through IDRA. The students will be surprised with the donated computers at 3:15 p.m. Wednesday at Odessa High School. IDRA stands for Intercultural Development Research Association, and it runs the Valued Youth Dropout Prevention Program. The IDRA Valued Youth Program identifies secondary students who are at risk of dropping out of school and places them as tutors with elementary students. The sense of responsibility and pride that role encourages the older students to do better and stay in school. In ECISD, the IDRA VYP is in place in Odessa High School with 35 students serving as tutors to students in Austin, Montessori, and Sam Houston Elementary Schools. Death notices March 3rd. Jane Town Cook, Odessa. Jane Town Cook, 75, of Odessa, died Saturday, February 26, in Odessa. Funeral service is scheduled for 1 p.m. February 4th at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Reverend Clydell Chapman is officiating. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Garden and Funeral Home of Odessa. Marga Warrington Pipes, Midland. Marga Warrington Pipes, 80, of Midland, died Tuesday, March 1st. Graveside service is scheduled for 11 a.m. March 4th at Frankston City Cemetery. Memorial service will be at Grace Lutheran Church in Midland at a later date. Arrangements are by Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Maria Luna, Odessa. Maria Luna, 66, of Odessa, died Sunday, February 27th in Odessa. Funeral service is scheduled for 1 p.m. on Saturday, March 5th at Odessa Funeral Home. Arrangements are by Odessa Funeral Home of Odessa. Eula Faye Hill Rand, Odessa. Eula Faye Hill Rand, 93, of Odessa, died Saturday, February 26th in Odessa. Celebration of life is scheduled for 1 p.m. March 4th at St. James Missionary Baptist Church. Burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery. Reverend Kenneth Johnson is officiating. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Hernan Trevino. Hernan Trevino, 61, of Odessa, died Sunday, February 20th in Odessa. No services have been arranged. Arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland. Gary Dwayne Lewis, Sr., Grand Prairie. Gary Dwayne Lewis, Sr., 63, died Monday, February 28th in Odessa. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa.
This is Jane reading for the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, March 2nd, from the Health and Wellness section. Breast Center has more help to detect cancer. Midland Health and the Breast Center are proud to announce the arrival of ABUS. ABUS is our next level offering of the best technology to provide the best opportunity for early breast cancer detection. So what is ABUS and what can it do for you? As you probably recall from previous articles in this column, mammography is not the only tool we use at the Breast Center to diagnose breast cancer. Both breast ultrasound and MRI are invaluable adjuncts to mammography in our fight against breast cancer. Ultrasound and MRI can be used as screening and diagnostic modalities. Screening ultrasound is usually recommended for women with dense breasts, which means increased fibrogranular tissue that tends to camouflage cancer on mammography. Ultrasound uses harmless sound waves to image breast cancer rather than X-rays used in mammography. Ultrasound can see through the dense breast tissue that mammography cannot. Mammography can see microcalcifications that may indicate very early or precancerous lesions that ultrasound cannot. So they work together in the detection of early curable breast cancer. MRI is more sensitive than both mammography and ultrasound in the diagnosis of breast cancer, but is currently reserved for high-risk patients, which is defined as those who have a greater than 20% lifetime risk of breast cancer due to cost and availability. So screening ultrasound is used for average risk factor patients, defined as those with a 10 to 14% lifetime risk with dense breasts. Until now, these screening ultrasound exams have been performed as handheld real-time studies by our highly qualified sonographers. The ABUS system is designed to give a broad range overview of the entire breast, making it easier for year-over-year comparisons and for more accurate detection of the suspicious areas in the breast that need further attention. This automated system will also free up our sonographers to do what they do best, which is hunting down targeted areas of concern and assist in ultrasound-guided biopsies. This makes our department more efficient and allows all participants in the breast cancer detection process to play their individual strengths. Midland Health and the Breast Center's top goal is to provide the patients of Midland County and the Permian Basin with technology and knowledge that exceeds expectations when it comes to early breast cancer detection and treatment. ABUS is one of many technologies that we are implementing to move the needle toward eliminating this deadly disease from our community. Expect excellence. We do. This is Jane reading for the Midland Reporter Telegram on Wednesday, March 2nd from the Health and Wellness section. Marsh wins Daisy Award. Patient nominates MMH nurse for international honor for receiving above and beyond care. The Daisy Award is an international nursing recognition program created to honor nurses who provide extraordinary, compassionate care. Midland Memorial Hospital is one of more than 4,900 healthcare facilities and schools of nursing worldwide that recognizes their nurses with this prestigious award. Anyone in the facility can nominate a nurse, be it a patient or visitor, another nurse, physician, or another staff member. Anyone who experiences or observes extraordinary, compassionate care being provided by a nurse. Please join us in congratulating our latest Daisy Award winner, Bethany Marsh, registered nurse. Bethany works in the mother-baby unit and was nominated for the prestigious Daisy Award by a patient who was powerfully impacted by the care received from Marsh. The patient wrote the following. From the moment we met Bethany, we were blessed by her presence. She went above and beyond for my new little family. From taking the kids for a few hours so we could get some sleep to helping me cope through the healing process. She was there. We ran into a few issues during the day, and she advocated for us and our babies during a few instances. We prayed she was our night nurse each night. We were there because we knew everything was going to be okay. She was positive and cheery and so knowledgeable. Seeing her at night was such a blessing. I will never forget her. She spoke with care and understanding, gave me some of my dignity back after delivery, soothed my two new babies, and just listened to my husband's and my questions. She even took our trash out a few times and straightened up our room a bit. She truly went above and beyond for all four of us. It is because of Bethany's compassionate and care that we experienced a level of care that exemplifies the impact nurses have in creating an environment where patients feel at home. Congratulations, Marsh.
Reactions to COVID vaccine booster. Dear Dr. Roach, if a person has a very severe reaction to a COVID booster, will they benefit from it? My cousin got very ill after her third shot. She has severe allergies. Will she be immune to COVID? CW. Answer, severe reactions to any dose of the COVID vaccine are unusual and unfortunate, but normally the vaccine is still effective as providing protection to the COVID virus. As we have seen, vaccinated people can still get infected, but they are much less likely to get sick that they need to be in the hospital or worse.
Here is the Dear Abby column that appeared in the Midland Reporter Telegram on Thursday, March 3rd. Drug abuse, bad finances derail caregiver's life. Dear Abby, I'm conflicted about a relationship I have developed with a 77-year-old lady I'll call Martha. I have been acting as her caregiver. For the first 3 years, I was addicted to pain pills, which Martha and I both get. I was so strung out, I didn't realize what kind of person she was. She expects me to be there every free minute, which, under different circumstances, would be fine. But I have a husband and a dog. I have since gotten sober, while Martha is still strung out. She threatens to destroy my life if I don't do what she wants, and I'm scared to quit because we have loans together. How do I start having a healthy balance with her and my life? Now that I'm sober, I realize how badly she has been treating me the whole time. Can you please advise me how to distance from her? Signed, Sober Woman in Georgia. Dear Sober Woman, for the sake of your sobriety, your relationship with Martha must end. Do not allow yourself to be blackmailed into continuing one with her. She needs to find another caregiver, and you need to find another job. Because your name is on those loans, you may be obligated to pay them off if she doesn't. This is why you should discuss this mess with an attorney. That Martha still abuses her meds means you may have some leverage. Dear Abby, my husband and I argue about returning gifts his parents give us. They are well off and buy excessively for their grandkids throughout the year, especially at holidays. They also buy multiple gifts for my husband and me. We are drowning in too much stuff and constantly battling clutter in our home. None of these gifts are from our family's wish lists, nor are they particularly thoughtful. In years past, I have asked my mother-in-law to limit her purchases to 3 gifts, 1 toy, 1 outfit, 1 book, with no success. I have also pleaded with her to stop buying me small knick-knacks and have suggested more experience-based gifts. Still, year after year, we come home with a bunch of stuff we neither need nor want. How can I get my in-laws to respect our wishes? To make matters worse, my husband becomes defensive of his parents when I get frustrated, even though he fundamentally agrees with me. How do I help his parents understand that what they are really giving us is a fight? And if none of them care about my wishes, how do I get past feeling disrespected and disregarded? Signed, Buried in Stuff. Dear Buried, by now you should have realized that your mother-in-law, Lady Bountiful, isn't going to change. You will spend less time being frustrated if you let go of your resentment about her spending sprees. My heartfelt advice to you is to develop a sense of humor where she's concerned. If you can't use her gifts, donate, regift, or sell them.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.